The city of Gotham gives rise to villains and darkness. Heroes and defenders of justice will rise up. The villains have chosen their dark path.
Our heroes made the choice of truth over personal happiness, and we have chosen to document it all. We are here to tell their stories. We are Gotham Undercover. Welcome to Gotham Undercover Extra 6. This is Jeff X-Force 11, and we have got a great podcast for you. We've got the GSM podcast crossover extravaganza with Aero Squad, Central City Underground, and none other than Made of Steel. We had a blast recording this with 7 hosts and a ton of listener feedback. Yes, we got to get in on the good stuff since we traveled to Gotham City and Elseworlds, and we got to see Batwoman. And Karen and I both are excited because if the CW picks up a Batwoman show, we're going to be there with Gotham Undercover. But now it's time to get into the podcast, so enjoy!
And welcome to the Golden Spiral Media podcast extravaganza as we cover the Elseworlds episodes that aired December 9, 10, and 11 of our Arrowverse shows. This is Central City Underground episode 122, Aero Squad episode 154, Made of Steel episode 75, and Gotham Undercover Extra number 6. Let me introduce all those who are here. My name is John, aka the Silver Vox from the Central City Underground. Who do we have?
This is Chris, aka the Professor. Happy to be here.
Excellent. Aero Squad, who's present?
You've got Martin the Flash here, and I brought along a new partner in crime.
And this is Harley Quinn. Hi.
Hey, Harley. So good to have you. And from the Made of Steel crew, who do we have?
We have you, John the Silver Fox, and me, Karen the Scarlet Cougar.
Absolutely. And from Gotham Undercover, all the way from Gotham City, who do we have?
It's X-Force 11.
And the Scarlet Cougar.
Hey, funny how that works.
I know,
and
right?
We have.
I made it all the way from National City to Gotham in like 10 seconds.
We have our incredible Eye in the Sky that covers the entire Arrowverse. The Green Butterfly is here.
Hi, everyone.
Yay, Justine. Yay.
Maybe we should change her name to the Monitor since she sees everything.
Right?
Dark.
What on earth am I on? All this flying around is making me not even know what earth I'm on.
Definitely right. Earth One. Definitely.
All right, just a little bit of how this is going to go. We are going to go through our episode ratings, and we're going to talk about breaking down each of the singular episodes just to hit the highlights, and then we're going to get into your feedback because you all spent a lot of time and a lot of investment in getting really good points over to us. So we want to make sure that we cover all of that good stuff. All right, let's jump in with what we thought about these individual episodes. And I think all of us have given also ratings on the Elseworlds crossover as a whole. All right, so let me start with, let's go with Karen. What say ye?
Me? I said The Flash, I gave 9 pickup trucks because that's what Superman was working on back in his hometown. I gave Arrow 8 menacing silhouettes as Batwoman was standing on top of the building. Supergirl, slightly underwhelmed with Supergirl, so I gave it a 7.25. Was she even theirs? And for the entire crossover, I gave it 8.5 creator shout-outs.
Excellent. Nice. Excellent. How about, hey, Harley Quinn, what did you think of all this?
I gave the Flash episode 8.5. I don't think that's your line. I gave Arrow 9 Batman Easter eggs. Mm-hmm. And Supergirl 7, I was just in the Fortress of Solitude, rounding out all of Elseworlds with 8 Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Nice.
Mr. X-Force, what did you give these episodes?
I gave Flash 9, Smallville, save me.
Somebody save Remy's.
Yep.
Right?
Yep. And then I gave Arrow 8. Holy shout outs, Batwoman. And let's see. Supergirl, I gave it 7.5 Ollie's for the win, Alex. And and then for the Elseworlds overall, I gave it 8 plot device arrows.
Hand wave hand.
Was that a kryptonite arrow he had at the end?
Sure looked like it, right?
I was like, wait a minute.
Very glowy.
Very glowy. Yeah. All right, let me jump in here. For the Flash, I gave this one 8 perfect iris pancakes. For Arrow, I gave it 7.5 Olicity Dramas 2 penny. And Supergirl, I gave it 7 lucky sisters. And for the Elseworlds as a whole, I gave it 8 monitors monitoring the mentoring of a bunch of monitored heroes.
And by the way, he was monitoring.
That's right. Martin, the Flash, what say ye?
Well, first of all, I love that you guys all gave me such a high rating to kick off every single one of yours.
Well, when you're good, you're good. You know?
All right, for me, episode 1, which was The Flash, I gave it 9.5 Freaky Fridays. Episode 2, 8.5 Earth 90 Flashes. And episode 3, I am way down from you guys. I only gave it a 5 WTF Did They Just Do? Which averages out to an overall 7.5 great starts followed by a horrible endings. Mm.
Ouch. Ouch. Professor Chris, what do you say, sir?
I gave Flash 9 out of 10. How many Earths are actually in the multiverse? For Arrow, I gave it 9. I am your lightning rod. And for Supergirl, I gave it 9 out of 10 impending crises. And overall, again, I don't teach math, so some professor I am, but 3 9s averaged out to a 10 out of 10. I don't want to wait 360 plus days until the crisis.
Excellent. And to end us on our usual positive note, Ms. Justina, what did you give these?
Well, every problem I had with the episode, I gave bonus points for other parts of the episode, which caused an average of Flash getting 10 amazing Amazo team-up takedowns, Arrow getting 10 Gotham girl power, and Supergirl got 10 awesome sister talks, great on any planet, for an overall 10 for hopeful heroes saving the world. All of the worlds.
Nice. Shouldn't that have been Amazo's team up at takedowns? Not amazing Amazo's. Just Amazo.
Yeah. My grammar's not so good.
Amazoing. Amazoing team up takedown. I'm sorry.
That's all right. Karen, since you're here, wanted to spend just a couple of minutes and really kind of set the stage because again, as most of you know, or any of you have heard Made of Steel, I do not have an extensive comic background. So I would love for you to dive in just for a minute on what it was that we saw setting up to Crisis on Infinite Earth. Okay, what was Monitor's big plan in trying to set all this up? Can you fill us in, any?
Monitor likes to think that he's impartial. To be honest, he's not. And since we only saw Monitor and we didn't see the anti-Monitor, they didn't really get the point across as to what his deal is. Really, his whole thing is to kind of keep track of all the multiverses and to make sure things go as planned. But in this case, he really had other machinations in mind, and we weren't really let in on what all of that was. Now, there were also some secrets that we didn't see that happened off screen, and those might come into play later, you know, when we do finally get to a crisis mm-hmm. on the show.
Excellent. All right, let's break this down episode by episode. Professor, why don't you walk us through kind of what we saw in The Flash and what were your highlights in that episode?
So The Flash obviously kicks this whole thing off, and we are greeted to Barry and Oliver being switched. The funny thing is, they both realize who they are, and to the rest of the world, they are seen as the other, which was, to go back to some of the feedback, very much the whole Freaky Friday and really the other show that I'm sure we've all seen and give a lot of love for. A lot of Quantum Leap references.
Oh, man.
And actually, well, let me hit that. Did they make a Quantum Leap reference in the third episode that was so blatant?
I don't remember that they did.
They did in the third one.
No, I don't think so. Just in the first two.
Yeah. All right. Well, two out of three.
Actually, if it was Quantum Leap, you wouldn't see yourself.
That's why we love Barry Allen.
I know. He's us.
He's us in the show.
Right. Exactly right.
So Barry and Oliver, they've swapped lives, and they find out that there is, you know, a disturbance, and I thought it was a really good episode. There's something that Story's voice, Jada, and I do where we talk about things that made us go, ooh, on the episode. And really it was, I mean, as much as I love The Flash, I'm a huge Superman fan. So to have, you know, live action Superman and to get introduced to Lois Lane, you know, it was just a super episode. And to, you know, go to Earth 38 and I'm almost at a loss for words, but it was just a really good episode. I'm just a huge fan of, you know, everything that happened in the episode. The only thing that was a little down for me was some of the Earth 38 stuff. I thought they could have moved things and a little forward and not given us so much of the dialogue, you know, just kind of keep the story moving and really hit us with some more stuff.
Martin, when we saw the interactions between how Barry goes about things and how Oliver goes about things and how the two of them have to figure this out in each other's persona, how did you feel with Oliver, especially having to figure out how to do things as Barry?
Yeah, actually, what I was saying on Arrow Squad, that I thought these were probably the best parts of the entire crossover, was watching Oliver and Barry interact with each other as each other. It was some of his finest performances. I didn't know Stephen Amell had the comedy chops that he did. His timing and everything was absolutely spectacular. His physical comedy, his mannerisms, everything was just spot on. I was cracking up constantly. Even, as I said on the other show, my partner, Patty Spivitt, she doesn't even watch Arrow, and she was laughing all the way through. So they did such a good job. Now, with the two of them, it was really good to see how different they both are on their respective shows, where, you know, Barry is a lot more, he's lighthearted, he's more compassionate, he looks at things from a different world perspective than Oliver. Oliver's a lot more hard-edged and a lot more punch first, ask questions later kind of guy. So to see them have to swap roles in that sense as well, so that nobody, because the rest of the world sees them as the other person, they don't want to mess that up for each other. So it was really cool to see them both struggle with Barry trying to play a darker, edgier version of himself and Oliver trying to lighten it up. I thought it was great all around.
Very nice. Very nice. Karen, where were you left with Supergirl kind of getting introduced in this episode, her role of trying to, you know, help these two out in this kind of quandary that they're in?
Well, I really appreciated the fact that when they did go to Earth 38, she recognized each of them, which means that, you know, on a cellular level, she knew who they were. And of course, that's part of the impetus for, hey, you know, someone believes us sort of thing. So she's kind of that crux, you know, in between everything. She's the linchpin. And bringing her back, of course, to Earth Prime, Earth One, we get to see a lot of stuff from her perspective in a way, because, you know, she's us in that case. We see them clearly as who they are, and she does too, but no one else does. So she gives us that kind of perspective. But I really enjoyed that, you know, we got to see Taylor Hoechlin again as Superman. I mean, I'm right with you on that. So exciting. And of course, you know, when they played Save Me, I laughed out loud. And we got a Lois Lane finally, which was fantastic. But overall, you know, she can be glue in between people that don't. She's very diplomatic. You know, you describe Barry as being lighthearted and compassionate, but he speaks before he thinks a lot. And of course, Oliver with the shooting before he he does anything else. And so she's the diplomat in this situation. She's like a utility player, as it were. Plus, you know, you have the superpowers on top of it. So I dug that she was the first person they thought of. She'll believe us. And so there they go off to meet with her. And she's, you know, the kind of the glue once they get her back to Earth One. And you know, she smooths things over. She discusses things, you know, with girls and, you know, all that stuff. So I loved that they brought her in.
Can I ask you something, Karen?
Mm-hmm.
Just on the point that you're saying there, I'm just curious about one thing. I agree with you that she is kind of the gray in between their dark and light. She's kind of is the settling of both forces. But The fact that they went to her Earth to find her, do you think that maybe Dr. Deegan, maybe the reality that he changed by opening a book only changed the reality for Earth One? It didn't change across all the other Earths, and that's why
I'm
she
assuming,
recognized
yes,
them.
Yeah. That's what happened. Now, it's going to have effects on other Earths because of what he used and because it triggered the monitor. Mm-hmm. So it does have ramifications, but I don't think it changed anything materially on any other Earth but Earth One.
Right. Cool.
All right, Mr. Gentry. We had Ivo Labs and Amazo as the antagonist for this episode. What, given your background, what did you feel like they accomplished in bringing Amazo to life?
It was neat seeing Amazo on the screen. I had seen him previously in some of the animated works, and so it was kind of interesting seeing this character adapting to other people's skills and kind of absorbing those and using those against them. I thought that was a neat way of having the heroes having to use, especially towards the end there, use their different abilities in tandem to defeat this villain. You know, pretty much Amazo was a plot device. I mean, you got, he's an android who has like a Mirakuru serum that's helping him adapt and things like that. And so, but you know, for the fun of it, it was interesting to see him do that. But I think the real fun was seeing the different heroes play off of him and try to defeat him the joy of getting to see them go all out power against this robot was a ton of fun. And, you know, it leaves the door open to have him come back in future times with different things. But I thought it was neat to see him absorbing those powers and them having to think outside the box to get rid of him.
Excellent. Excellent. All right. So, yeah. Anything else anybody particularly saw about the Flash episode that they want to bring up?
I just found it funny with Amazo that it reminded me a lot of the Sentinels from the X-Men. Very similar idea. They adapt to the to whatever's being used against them. They adapt and are no longer prone to it anymore.
Right.
A lot of similarities.
Okay, so let's switch over to day number two, an arrow. And Martin, I know you and Cammie have put out your own arrow squad for this week that, that really dives into the episode. So we won't spend a lot of time. We'll just direct our folks over to arrow squad episode number 153 to get your in-depth angle on this. But I do want to bring up a couple of things, especially for our resident Gotham undercoverers. Batwoman. Okay. We have an entirely new setup in Gotham City, in Kate Kane, in Batwoman. All right. Jeff, Karen, how did this come off?
Amazing. I loved it. I love Kate Kane. She was great. I loved Chicago. I mean, Gotham. yeah, they use Chicago. But it was so dark looking, and just it really did kind of fit in to the mythology that we're used to on TV with the city. It's like the future Elseworlds version of Gotham. I just thought it was very cool. And of course, all so many Easter eggs. I mean, so many Easter eggs, not just Batman Easter eggs, but just, you know, at the corner of Nolan and Burton. Wade and Augustine, Mark Wade and Brian Augustine. Brian Augustine wrote the first ever Elseworlds story. So that's who those are. It's just crazy, all the stuff.
Well, they had a lot of the rogues on those cells. They had
Cobblepot.
They had
Cobblepot O, Isley P, that's Poison Ivy, Carlo B, that's Clayface, Nigma E, of course, the Riddler, Guggenheim M, that's the Arrow showrunner, of course, the former Arrow showrunner. And he produced these episodes, so.
Yeah, I've got the DC streaming service, and because of that, they have given access to one of the runs of Batwoman, and so I've read through that to get a little more familiar. But I thought it was very cool the way, granted, they're filming in April a pilot, but an intro to this and leading into hopefully a Batwoman series. But I do appreciate the facts that we got to see the Bane mask, the fact that Batman / Bruce Wayne have been missing for 3 years. It really rolls into the Nolanverse of films where Batman's really retired at this point and nobody's, you know, we need a protector in the city. And so I enjoyed that. I enjoyed the potential team ups with Supergirl in the future, World's Finest that Justina brought up, and the other Made of Steel. So I really enjoyed it. I know some people thought that that section was a little long, but I mean, if you look back at some of the other crossovers, it's introducing a character that hopefully will have a series. So I enjoyed it. I don't have as much of a history with Batwoman as I do Batman. But it was fun to actually see the city and see what we might potentially get from the series.
Excellent. Jess, I know that with the name Harley Quinn, obviously you've got some investment here in this part of the universe. I'm curious. One of the things that really stood out for me was after the battle with Flash, Reverse Flash, Oliver and Malcolm Merlyn, you know, Barry took Oliver aside and was just like, are you okay? Like he got some really deeper insight into what was going on with Oliver. What did you take away from that point of it?
Oh, I love this whole sequence. I mean, first of all, because they introduced the Scarecrow fear toxin, which was fantastic. And then them being able to play, like, they're battling each other and playing off of each other, yet they were seeing, you know, their worst enemies. And I think in a lot of ways, like, their darkest fears. And so what I really liked about the whole sequence was that you got to see each other get, or like Barry and Oliver both get to insight into the other person's respective lives. And because they are so different, and they talked about this throughout the whole crossover about how different Barry and Oliver are. And so to put them in different bodies and then have them be able to experience each other's like worst nightmares and worst fears, I thought that was a brilliant idea, and that it went a long way to kind of solidify the bond between those two characters. I really loved it. I did find there were some moments where I just suspend some disbelief, because it did look like Flash Oliver was getting to use some of his speed against a non-speed, like speedster person. But I was willing to overlook that because the sequence, I just loved the way that it was flash back and forth, and the things that each of the villains said, I really enjoyed the way that was played out. I thought it was very well done.
That's what I nitpicked on Aero Squad about Harley was it,
I know.
If he is seeing the reverse Flash, he's fighting him with all of the speed that he's got, Oliver would not stand a chance. He'd be a puddle of leather and like there'd be nothing left of him if the Flash really went all out on him with his Speed Force abilities. So yeah, that like you said, you had to suspend belief there for a little
bit. But hand wave, it was not our Eobard-thon. It was another Eobard-thon that maybe was a little weaker. Hand wave.
Yeah, exactly. You got to hand wave. You have to, but it was a cool filmed moment for sure.
Yeah, it was definitely. Yeah.
So Justina, there was a lot of girl power in this episode. We had Kate Kane, we had Supergirl. We mentioned it here a little while ago about the potential team up. What is it about this episode that stood out to you as far as where we think the female characters of this episode really kind of got their moment to shine?
This episode really got me excited for the potential for Batwoman going forward, because unlike Batman, who we have all these movies for, I really have no experience with Batwoman, and she just looks so cool, and the score was so good when she's in her Batcave looking at her suit. I was just like, oh, this is gonna be the coolest thing. I loved getting to see Killer Frost team up with someone new in Victor Freeze's wife, played by Stephen Amell's wife. I thought that was really cool to see that. And I love the conversations that Kate Kane and Supergirl had. This episode was just packed with wonderful Gotham girl power.
Now, Daryl Washington, who's a frequent feedbacker for Made of Steel, brought up this point, and I wanted to see what you guys thought of this. She like X-rayed her vision, X-ray visioned Kate, and like just didn't even think about it. She just sort of did it. Does that cross a line for anybody?
Okay, wait. I have to say, she did that after Kate already knew who they were.
Yeah. But does that matter?
No. I'm just saying it. I think it's okay. I think she probably does it involuntarily sometimes. And since she knew that they were on the same side, you know, it's okay. But it's morally gray, definitely.
Well, you got some tattoos. It's like, whoa.
Right? Does that X-ray vision work? Because that's kind of, I think I was following John's, does that cross a line in a different way?
I just assumed she was seeing bones. I didn't even think about that she was counting tattoos.
I think they can go in layers. I think the supers can go in layers. So just under the suit, and then, you know, which is invasive, mind you, but.
Oh, yeah. Very. Yes.
Yeah.
That's
although now control. She can go to Alex and say, hey, maybe there's a new girlfriend for you.
To be fair, though, earlier in that episode, she referenced her own tattoos while she was in Bruce Wayne's old office.
She did.
She brought it up herself.
Right.
And I thought she was kind of flirting with Supergirl.
She was.
She was.
Yes.
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 100%.
And totally cold-shouldering the boys.
All right. Anything else that anybody just needs to bring up about our second part in Arrow?
Did you notice that Kara played with a bronze bust of Shakespeare?
Yeah, what was that about?
In ode to the original Batman show where they used the Shakespeare.
He lifted up his head and that's how.
And he went down the Batvault.
Right. Good pull.
And we did see, hold on, you said Bane's mask and we saw the Penguin's umbrella, Hugo Strange's sunglasses, the Riddler's cane, and the Riddler graffiti said, "What's blue and gray and red all over?" Which it's kind of a reference to Batman wearing his gray suit and the blue cape. So it's just a reference back to a comic related story.
Leave it to the Gothamites to catch all of that.
Came up within that episode, the Bane mask was the Bane mask from the Nolan trilogy.
Awesome.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
And, like it, I was wondering.
And the freeze gun was, and I hate to say this out loud, was the Schwarzenegger freeze gun from Batman and Robin.
Oh, I love that. Good job.
Oh, yeah. And the sketch of Monitor and John Deegan was drawn by Jim Lee of DC Comics fame.
Okay. That was very cool.
Nice.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Where's that paper today?
Apparently, Stephen Amell cannot draw, which, you know, come on.
In 3 seconds.
Yeah, not a
bad right.
One thing I really enjoyed, kind of, I believe it may have been in all three, but we had advice from Killer Frost. In several of the episodes where she's sitting down and talking to Felicity, she's sitting down and she's talking with Alex. You know, she has those heart-to-heart conversations, you know, as Killer Frost in some of the cases and as, you know, Caitlin and others. So I really enjoyed that she kind of was there to help each other, help the characters really be who they should be. And that coming from somebody who's struggling with two identities merging together. I really enjoyed that about these three episodes with Caitlin.
I got to say that conversation between her and Felicity is one of my favorite Felicity conversations ever. I really enjoyed watching them together. And I thought for a very brief second, shouldn't it be Iris? But then, you know, I think that Felicity and Iris just have so little in common when it comes to their relationships. I think that Caitlin is a much better person to discuss things with Felicity. So I love that they made that choice.
Well, they have a bit more history together, too, like you were leading into there. And I think this was great for Caitlin and Killer Frost. She got so much more to do in this crossover than she's had before. Mm-hmm. And she was perfect for everything that they had her do. It was a perfect set piece for her to get to be part of. And I mean, her Killer Frost stuff was simply amazing. That was some of the best Killer Frost we've seen. Her going full on and getting really angry. It was great stuff.
Definitely. Oh, and you guys noticed the line that John Wesley Shipp says to John Diggle about not wearing a ring.
Mm-hmm. Everybody got that.
Yeah, they might be setting up for a John Stewart kind of situation.
Diggle would so love that.
Oh,
or the actor.
Wouldn't he hate it to be bestowed upon? I don't think he'd love it, but I think he would definitely do it because he is very just and fair, and he would definitely be a good target for the lanterns.
Or, well, apparently he's very partial to the color green. So.
Yeah. Or like they've done with the different actors playing different parts, depending on what Earth they're on, he could be John Stewart on a different Earth.
I'm assuming so, that he is on Earth 90.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's my guess as well.
Yeah.
But let me just throw at you, how awesome was it of John Wesley Shipp? I found his performance so amazing as the Flash.
Oh, so good.
I want to ask your guys' opinion, because this is my personal taste. I think his 90s Flash suit is leaps and bounds better than Barry's Flash suit. It just looks better.
Okay. It, as long as he wears the updated one, yes.
Yeah, the one that we saw.
The 90s show looks like a Halloween costume compared to what he was wearing in this episode. But
in this episode,
I like it. I mean, I don't hate Barry's suit, though, except for the fact that it looks ridiculous on Ollie. I mean, you can... the thing that hit me when I saw Ollie wearing that suit and, you know, having to be cajoled, please put the head up so that no one knows who you are. And of course, everyone knows who the Flash is, right? I mean, isn't that the deal that, you know, he outs himself to everybody?
Pretty much.
But it just struck me that, okay, we might think the suit looks ridiculous, but it looks normal on Grant Gustin. And it looks really out of place on Steven. Is all I can say.
So, well, and we'll on the other side of that, I thought that Barry actually looked good in the Green Lantern.
Agreed.
In the Green Arrow suit.
Yeah, he did.
He did. At least more at home than Ollie in the Flash, the spandex outfit.
I think what I'm having trouble with the new suit is the lack of chin strap on. Yeah. I think it makes his head look so much bigger on the top, like he's wearing some kind of bowl cut or something. It's it's just really odd looking. And
a little bit, yeah. A little bit.
And I do like the darker red of John Wesley Shipp's Flash. I like the darker red better. And
yeah,
I don't know. But,
and of course, you know, Earth 90, the show was out in 1990. Just for
people. Yeah, that was so much fun.
I love that.
The only thing I was down on about 90s Barry Allen was that I thought there was going to be more of him.
Yes.
And we really got very little.
Yeah. And there wasn't very much. Yeah.
Not enough.
Pretty much just say, don't go in there, sort of, you know.
Very Justice League moment there.
Yeah, it was.
Well, there's a chance for him to come back, because the Monitor did just portal him away, so there's a chance for more.
Yep.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. All right, let's turn the page over to night number three and Supergirl. So interestingly, one of the things that I noticed was that the teams went from nearly the full complement of the Flash team to very selected members of the Arrow team to none of the of the Supergirl
team. Right?
We had Alex. We had Jean come in at the very end. We had Brainy come in at the very end.
We have a more complete Supergirl team on this podcast.
We do. And I think really Tyler Hoechlin as Superman was the stars of the Supergirl hour. And part of what makes me say, you know, this one is a lot less, in my opinion, is that Supergirl is a female-driven show. And I understand this had to fit in with the rest of it, but, you know, it just didn't seem female driven to me at all.
Yeah.
So that was my main, you know, so it's Supergirl there at all. And I'm talking about Supergirl as a whole, not Supergirl the person, but like the show, the feel of the show, just.
Well, how about the, like, I just felt wedged into me having Superman and Lois get married. Like we just met Lois. We have no emotional connection to her other than any historical feelings, but this actress's version of her.
Okay, let me get a thumbs up or down from everybody on Elizabeth Tulloch as Lois Lane. I'll go ahead. I will jump out there and say negative. No.
Yeah, I'm with you. Thumbs down.
I liked her.
I'm thumbs up.
I think I'm neutral. I don't have enough Superman background. I'm more of a Batman kind of girl, not really a Superman. So it's harder for me to judge because I didn't watch as much of the incarnations, and those are not the things that are freshest in my mind. And I think what did it in for me in this third part was the whole Superman storyline. I was like, I don't really know what's happening. It's all about Superman.
Well, that, to be fair, neither did we.
No, you're not alone.
I don't know how much of that was on Supergirl or not, because I'm obviously not watching that.
Well, I mean, if you know anything about John Deegan, it kind of makes sense. But otherwise, I mean, and who would?
Yeah.
You know, it's a very selective group of people that know who that character is.
Well, and even if you don't know anything about it, this whole crossover didn't teach us anything about him. He was such a poorly conceived villain for this episode. We didn't even need him in there. He's the guy that opened the book. Big deal.
Right.
Like, that's
right.
All he ended up being.
Right. And I was so excited when they cast Jeremy Davies, too.
Yeah, he's such a good actor.
I mean, he can knock it out of the park when he's given great writing. I mean, you look at him on Justified and
Lost.
And he's just amazing
Lost.
There. And it's so good. And I felt like for Lois, I'm kind of with Jess, because I see what they were trying to do, kind of give us a picture of who she is. But I think they were just saying, doesn't this resemble Margot Kidder? You know, hey, doesn't this kind of look like Margot Kidder?
Well, they even put her in a nightgown like Margot Kidder.
So, I mean, I'm kind of neutral. I need to see more to say yay or nay on that one.
Yeah.
Well, I just think we had to jump in too far with her without any kind of background. It was like, it was all of the too much forward-ness. And I don't mean that as a derogatory thing. That is part of who Lois is, but we didn't have any of the background of her also being like Margot Kidder in being vulnerable at the same time. It was just complete in your face. You're going to catch me and always, you know, right there with you. And, you know, you're not going to do this by yourself. And I was just like, wow, slow down, you know? So I don't know.
Well, and that with the marriage thing, like I led off, it's like, because we're at the Holy Trinity of Arrow, Flash, and Supergirl. And it's like, okay, well, we've had a wedding on Arrow. We had a wedding on Flash. We need characters on Supergirl to get married. Well, we got nobody at that point in the character storylines yet. All right, let's marry Superman Lois. Let's do it. Just so all three shows have had a marriage. And it just didn't fit. It didn't belong in this crossover to have that, because we're like what we're all saying, we're not connected to this version of Lois.
And I honestly felt it was a little bit weird to have a shotgun wedding kind of a thing. And I know that's just my personality bending into that as well, but it was just like, I'm really surprised that they handled it this way. I don't know. Am I off? No,
I just didn't think it was necessary.
Agree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Then I have to come at it from a different point of view. I mean, we're on a chat where you can see behind me, I got a whole lot of him present in the studio.
Yeah.
I appreciated, you know, it kind of tugged at my heartstrings, the resemblance to Margot Kidder. Things that made me go, ooh, in this episode were a lot of the Superman things that happened. You know, the dress, the crushing of the coal to make the diamond. So for you guys that are a little down on it, then maybe you'd be on board for, say, 21 to 22 episodes of them getting a show, which, you know, we've seen some articles that talked about it, debunked it, but I mean, I would certainly welcome more of that story. But, you know, you guys made a point of that we don't have any frame of reference for this character. But I mean, I've been watching Supergirl since, you know, season one, and they've started out referencing Superman through the chat, and then, you know, coming that we finally get to meet him, and they've always referenced, you know, my cousin, you know, we've heard references. This is just the first time we got to see her. I think the writers are just banking on, we know what their history is, and we're just, this is our introduction to them just to see that, but we know what it is. So they're playing, you know, from the movies, you know, everything we know about that relationship. I think they just want us to make that leap and go with it.
Yeah. I understand what you're saying, Chris. It's similar to the Spider-Man Homecoming movie. They didn't need to do a whole origin story again because everybody knows his origin. So they skipped that. It's the same kind of feeling. I think it's just, it would have been great if it was just them. Just have her in here in this crossover being Lois Lane and helping Superman out. Don't do the wedding part.
Yeah.
And I think it would have been a lot better.
Yeah. And I don't care that they did it. I just feel like it just wasn't necessary. It, And I'm not saying they needed to take it. I don't know. I feel like I'm sounding mean, and I don't mean to be mean. I'm just saying it was something that just didn't, you know, it was, you could have taken it out and the episode would have been the same. Mm. So
Justina, I haven't heard from you on this. Where are you with all this?
I really like this iteration of Lois Lane, but I am biased because I liked the actress going in. I have experience with the actress. So, but I do agree that I was pretty shocked by it. Not that it happened, but I'm surprised that it didn't happen on a regular Supergirl episode at some point. I'm surprised they chose to put it in the crossover because it didn't have anything really to do with the crossover, but I loved it just the same.
Good point, yeah. As always, yeah. Justina.
Yeah. Yeah. Excellent. So just a logistical question. How did Oliver and Barry know to go to that apartment building to find Monitor?
They were looking for Cisco, and yeah. I believe that's supposed to be Cisco's apartment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
The Monitor found them.
Yes. So instead, when they open the door, instead of them finding Cisco, he monitors, he does his thing. When they open the door, instead of going into whoever was living in that apartment, we assume not Cisco, they found the Monitor instead.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Because I was like, how did they end up there?
How did you guys like the Cisco kid? Essentially. Yeah. It
seems
weird,
like,
right?
It seems like Cisco in every crossover, every time he has to play a different role other than Cisco from The Flash, it's always a mob boss or a gang leader of some kind. They don't seem to expand his other identities very much.
Yeah. Yeah. It was so awkward. Especially since, like, he's the only one that had some... Okay, except for... Harry, who has the French accent right now. Yeah. He's the only one that had to do a voice affectation in this whole thing. And it was just, he's not an impressionist. Let's put it that way.
Well, I mean, James, don't call me Jimmy Guardian, also did a little.
A little bit. Oh my goodness. Yeah. Roll eyes.
Yeah. Was he really? In charge of the multiverse's Jets or the Sharks?
Yeah. When you're a jet all the way.
All right. So the final battle, there is some question. Karen, maybe you can shed some light on this. What was that hammer thing?
Yes.
This was carrying.
Okay. It's probably Steel's hammer.
Okay.
That is the prevailing opinion. Hmm. It's a quote unquote Thor-like hammer. And what was the other thing? Oh, I'm not going to talk about who the man is. But yeah, the hammer, most likely Steel's hammer.
Okay. Very good. All right. I found the end conversation because we always have to wrap these up with Barry and Oliver talking about what they've learned. Right? The very special
part. It's like Stan from South Park. I've learned something today.
Do you think that the experiences, not the events, none of this stuff I don't think is going to be covered in any detail whatsoever in our regular storylines, but do you think the events...
Really?
Well, no. Okay, maybe. But do you think the events and what Barry and Oliver have had to bring on from each other, do you think that will have a bearing on their characters moving forward? Let me start with Martin, since you are the man of the Oliver.
All right. I think, like, most of the crossovers have barely had hardly any resonance going on to the regular season storylines, just very minor parts. But I think this one may be a little bit more with what you're asking us about is their characters, the changes that they experience, will that carry forward? And I think what we kind of plotted a little bit about over on Arrow Squad, I think Oliver might come out of this being a little bit more lighthearted and a little bit more jolly in a sense that he might be, they might be working him a little more towards the comic book version of him, where Oliver is a little bit more of a jokester and, you know, likes to have a little bit more fun. So that this might be the transition point for him moving towards that. And I think for Barry, he might, just to throw my opinion in there, I think he might start to take things a little more seriously. He might have a little bit more harder of an edge and not be so, I don't know, trying to help everybody all the time and be the good guy in every situation.
Now, Professor, Iris doesn't want Barry to become anything like Oliver. So where do you think that falls as we move forward with the Flash?
I think, and that comment got a lot of backlash in a lot of the comments and across our various groups. And I wasn't sure to take it as, you know, she's talking about Barry as we, Oliver, as we have seen him over the run of Arrow, or in that reality, was like, were they like legitimately switched the way we, the audience, perceive that switch to be? So I took Iris to be saying, you know, not to develop that dark edge, because, you know, Iris has this obvious perception of who Oliver Queen is, you know, this darker, grittier, more hard-nosed, you know, hero. And, you know, all she's ever known and loved now is Barry and, you know, who he is. So I think that conversation was just to, you know, just to warn him, be aware of, you know, who your friends are, and, you know, kind of, you know, go from there, but not to really take on who he is, and just a warning.
Jess, what do you think about these two moving forward? Do we see changes, or do they kind of go back to who we found them to be an episode ago?
I think we're going to see some slight changes. I think especially I'm going to call back to where they were battling the villains and then kind of the conversations they have surrounding all that they've learned about each other. And I think they're going to learn to kind of appreciate different aspects of the other. So I think kind of going where Martin was going with Oliver, I think he's going to be just a little bit more like lighthearted, maybe not quite as light as Barry, but I think we're just going to see him maybe lighten up a little bit, especially after the dark prison storyline. Maybe that's a way to help him heal and kind of move on from all the trauma that he kind of experienced during that. And then for Barry, I think Barry's going to get a healthy dose of suspicion. And I think Barry needs a healthy dose of suspicion, because I've got some crazy theories about the Flash that I'm not going to throw out here right now, because we'll derail the whole conversation. I don't think I'm alone either, but let's just say I really think he needs to be a little bit more suspicious and less trusting.
Good points, Jess.
Well, that's come to bite him in the butt before, where he's very trusting. And I think just overall, he needs to be a little less trusting as a superhero. You know, you kind of got to look at both sides of an issue and wonder if people really do have the same, if they're the same as what you're perceiving. Mm-hmm. And I have a theory about Arrow that we're in, what, season 7 of Arrow now?
Seven, is that
where we are? Okay, so how much of a shelf life do you think it has still?
Well, I've heard the producers say they would love it to go 10 seasons if they can get 10 seasons out of it.
They would love it to.
Yeah.
But is it going to?
Well, I mean, Stephen Amell did say to the writers, write this season as if it was your last.
Right. So now, playing into that, and I'm not saying it's going to get canceled, you know, I think it's 50-50 at this point, because it is working on some fatigue. But we know the Flash and Supergirl are going to stay on the air because they're a little fresher. They have more of an audience on both of those shows, to be honest. Arrow's, you know, moved down a little bit in the hierarchy. So those two characters die in the crisis in the comics. No spoiler alert here. I mean, this is like from 30 years ago. So they die in the comics, as was stated in this episode. Who looked at the book and saw that?
Superman.
But told Oliver. So Oliver knows that they're going to die based on, you know, what he's heard, right? So them swapping bodies, he gets to see Barry in a different light. And he made a deal with the monitor, and we don't know what that deal is, do we?
I'm glad you brought that up, because that's something that's a big question. What was the deal he made?
Maybe he traded something for their lives.
Yeah, the monitor talked about, you know, being a balance. And I think that may play into, you know, the crossover next year. And it may linger on a little bit further than that. But I think he had to make a promise there in order to get whatever arrow that he got from the monitor there.
And not just that, but he saved their lives too. Mm-hmm. I mean, because they would have died. I have no doubt, because that was how they die in crisis. And I think he traded himself for them because he thinks that they're both better at their jobs than he is.
He thinks the world needs them more than the world need him because of his perceived darkness.
Right.
Well, and so, also Stephen Amell has said a couple times in interviews that what is there left for Oliver Queen to do other than the only thing is to leave a legacy. Now they've introduced his half sister. So if that story eventually turns into him training her or whatever, and she takes on the Green Arrow mantle, that allows the door open for him to exit the series.
Right.
And Arrow plus could continue on. Plus William, But I know Arrow may not be the number one show out of all of these anymore, but its ratings are actually up this year, and it's this is actually being a very successful season that they're already talking about season 8. So it's at least going to carry on, I would think, for one more season.
Yeah, I think they've tried to give themselves an opportunity with what they've set up for Crisis, especially with us not knowing what bargain that he's made and exactly how he did save them and, you know, managed to set things right. I don't know if it is setting up necessarily an exit for Stephen Amell or if it's just something they're going to get creative with. But, I mean, if it does, I don't think it may be surprising to any of us.
Is it crazy theory time yet?
Oh, anytime.
All right. I thought this is initially, and let me know if I'm totally off base, but here's what I think.
You're way off, man.
Right?
So based on the teaser of coming fall 2019 Crisis, okay, that leads me to believe a couple of things. One, will they do this crossover to start the season, and will the crossover linger amongst all the show's main plot points to start next fall in 2019?
Oh, can I cross my fingers right now?
And if it does, I theorize that Flash will get renewed for an eighth season. Arrow will get renewed for an eighth season, but it will be a half season. Mm. And the results of this crisis will be a consolidation and eliminate the multiverse, therefore putting Supergirl, that will put them all in the same thing. Mm-hmm. Maybe now they bring in
Black Lightning.
Right.
And they consolidate it to one universe.
Just like in the comics. 2019,
or about halfway through.
Well, and that's what happens at the end of Crisis. Again, no spoilers. Mm-hmm. It's 30 years old. But all of the multiverses are condensed. Now, afterwards, it's been retconned. We have multiverses again, but at the end of Crisis, we were down to Earth Prime.
Right. So,
yeah, it's a crazy theory, but it's not that crazy of a theory. I kind of dig it.
And only for the fact that last year they set up and they dropped Nora Allen on us in the crossover, and they played the long game with that. So could there be things in this crossover that they're playing the long game with?
Well, they've been playing the long game since season one of Flash, when they showed us the first newspaper, wasn't it? Season one, where you saw the future newspaper of him disappearing?
Yeah, in the Braille room, yeah.
Yeah, that's a really long play.
Also, even longer when you think about they've had the Legion ring in these shows from the very beginning. We only got it last year, so.
Speaking of that, and it just seems that everything seems to revolve around the Flash now.
Mm-hmm.
Jess, go ahead.
Oh, eights. Well, I wanted to go back to the newspaper because I had a question. So within that newspaper, it's always the Flash disappears in a crisis with the red skies and whatever. Was that supposed to be this episode, or is that supposed to be how, or is that how Crisis starts?
That's how Crisis
ends. Not how Crisis starts, but it's part of Crisis.
Yeah.
Okay. Do we think that the things that were happening within this crossover were potentially supposed to be a nod to that newspaper clipping, or do we think that that's still a later event probably going to happen in Crisis in 2019? Because we know Nora Allen has now moved up our timeline, so it's not 2024 anymore.
Right.
Yeah. I think it's a preview of things to come.
Right. I think that the Monitor taking an interest in this situation is what's going to snowball into Crisis next season.
Yeah. And they had red skies. Everywhere they went, the skies were red.
Exactly. Right? Which is
it followed them.
The newspaper says.
So that's right.
Which goes back to the idea of Monitor talking about this balance that needs to be created. There's something else coming. And I don't think I'm spoiling anything with the next episode of The Flash coming in January, but in some teasers they released, you see a clip of the future newspaper that is strategically cropped at the top.
So
I think maybe we're going to start to see some changes.
Yeah, different year maybe, you think? Yeah.
Yeah. I got a question, though, for, I guess, Karen, you might be the best one to answer, or Jeff, that, and you've got in the notes here, the guy in the gold mask.
Mm-hmm.
I heard someone say Psycho Pirate, but I don't know I don't know anything about the character. Maybe you guys can just fill us in a little bit about who
Roger
that is.
Hayden, the Psycho Pirate, he wears a Medusa mask.
Okay.
It allows him to manipulate the emotions of others. And he played a major role in Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Ah, okay.
He says the line, "Worlds will live, worlds will die, and nothing will ever be the same." That is the actual tagline from the DC Comics Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Wow. Okay, that's cool.
I'm so excited for the fall.
Yeah. He wears that mask and he becomes addicted to absorbing other people's emotions and letting things play out. So,
all right. Well, we have a ton of feedback to get through. So does anybody else have anything specifically on the third episode or just anything they really need to get out on the table before we do?
I have two little things. I'm sorry.
No, please.
I'm terrible. Yeah. Okay. So, first of all, Jeremy, hello, what's his name?
Davies.
Jeremy Davies.
Thank you. I was going to say Renner and I'm like, nope, wrong franchise. Jeremy Davies has now been on three DC Comics shows, Constantine, Lucifer, and, well, okay, five, if you count all three of these.
Yeah, all three.
But he's in the verse, essentially. So I thought that was interesting. He plays John Deegan, who is Dr. Destiny in the comics as well. And if you guys are interested in learning something really twisted about Dr. Destiny, his name is John D, not Deegan, in the Sandman comics. And he was in an issue called 24-Hour Diner, and it is the most twisted comic I have ever read. Plays very much like a horror movie, and it really shows something into the mind of Dr. Destiny. So I just wanted to give that a little shout out. If you've ever read 24-Hour Diner, you know what I'm talking about. So Dr. Destiny, very cool character, has, you know, been peppered throughout the DC Universe comics. And I would have liked to see him a little more, but he's not dead. And his face looks very much like Dr. Destiny does in the comics, kind of a skull face. So maybe we'll see him again.
Cool.
Excellent. Excellent. As most of you know that listen to Made of Steel, our Scarlet Cougar drops in a Cougar's Comic Corner in each of those. So we got one here. That's
fine. I do not recommend that for anyone who is at all squeamish.
Oh.
So just caveat.
Not for you, Justine.
It is a horror movie written as a comic book. I mean, it is very gory and yeah. So just fair warning.
All right. Did you have something else or was that it?
Nope, I'm good.
Cool. Cool. All right. Let's move on to our feedback. We unfortunately did not get any for Central City Underground this week. That's okay. They were very active in the Facebook discussion around this episode and got this whole discussion of Elseworlds off to a great start. So we do have feedback coming in from Arrow Squad. So Martin and Jess, I'll let you guys take over at this point.
Well, you know what? I have a suggestion because there's quite a bit of Arrow Squad feedback, and it sounds like there's some Supergirl feedback as well. Why don't we do a thing like me and Jess will read two or three, and then you guys read two or three, and we'll just bounce back and forth. So, awesome. So it's not straight.
How close are we to the half-hour mark? Because this would be a good point.
We don't have any limit, so.
Yeah, it got reset.
Oh, okay, good. I'm sorry.
All right, well, let's kick it off. I'm going to play a little Arrow sound effect here. Let's do this. All right, we're going to kick it off with an email from our friend Christy, and she says, "Overall, I think this was the funniest of all the crossovers we've had, especially the first two nights. I'd love for the regular episodes to be infused with just a fraction of the fun we had with this crossover. I thought it was really important that along with swapping bodies, Barry and Oliver also had to take on the weight of what the other one deals with on a regular basis. It added another dimension to the fantastic talks that these two characters have each time we have a crossover. The moment that made me laugh the hardest was Oliver laughing at how ridiculous Barry's dislocated thumb looked." Yeah, that was funny. Actually, that whole pipeline scene was amazing. "I had a hard time believing that with everything Team Flash has encountered that they would have a hard time processing switching bodies. It's no crazier than doppelgangers or shapeshifters. Nice to see that even in an alternate reality, Diaz gets beaten by Oliver once again. I enjoyed Batwoman once she was in costume. Great entrance at the asylum, but I was a little underwhelmed with her earlier scenes just as Kate Kane." See, that's funny. I was opposite of that. "I thought the third part of the crossover lost a bit of steam. Maybe it's because we'd gotten past the novelty of the swapping and had to focus more on the monitor and the deranged Dr. Deegan. My one gripe with the whole thing was the concept of the magic book rewriting reality. Conceptually, it was a bit out there, especially when Barry and Oliver crossed over from an abandoned building to green screen outer space." Awesome, Christy. Thank you for that. Yeah, any thoughts on what she had to say, guys?
I thought the funniest thing in the entire thing was Barry telling Oliver that he needed to tell Iris that he was his lightning rod, and Oliver just laughed out loud. I'm not going to say that.
Really? You didn't like the training scene?
Oh, that was so great.
Where Barry trains Oliver how to be fast and he ends up shooting him in the back, just like...
Yeah. All of it. That was the best stuff of his entire crossover, was just those two for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I loved Oliver defending himself as being the original vigilante and didn't believe in Batman.
Oh, that was great. Like, yeah. I'm the original vigilante.
Great stuff. I will call in this next one. It's a voicemail from Taz in DC. Here it is.
"Hey, Golden Spire Media, this is Taz in DC calling with feedback for the massive three-night Elseworlds crossover for Made of Steel, Arrow Squad, and Central City Underground. I am still squeeing like a little schoolgirl over this amazing crossover event. So many Easter eggs, so much fan service. Clearly the writers have been listening to the fans and hearing the criticism, both good and bad, and just finding ways to both make fun of themselves and have the characters grow and change and become different by these crossovers. Every time Oliver and Barry spend any time together, I see Oliver re-examining who he is. I really want to know what the monitor made Oliver give up to save Barry and Kara at the end of the episode. I am excited for Batwoman. She looks amazing. The whole Gotham pulling in from that universe. I kind of want to see a Superman, Lois Lane, and Superboy show now with that backdoor pilot. Crisis on Infinite Earths coming in 2019. So many things and so much speculation between now and next year. But I am going to lay down my marker right now that at the end of that, there will be no more separate Earth 38 and Earth 1. They will combine them all, and that will make life a lot easier for a lot of people. That's just my thinking. But I can't wait to hear what you guys have to say. Thanks for all you do, and take care. Bye."
Awesome. Thanks so much, Taz. Glad you had fun with this crossover, and thank you for all the compliments. So appreciated.
Great feedback, Taz.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, Jess, one more from us, and then we'll switch over. Why don't you read out Amanda Tavares?
All right. Amanda says, hey, Arrow Squad, Amanda Tavares here. I have no idea if you'll receive this in time or not. Well, good news, we did. But after this crossover, I had to say a few words. I love so many things about this crossover, but as an Arrow fan, I was so, so disappointed. To see everybody treating Oliver as if he just got out of Leanne Yu really pained me. They were talking about season one Oliver as if he had learned nothing since then. I couldn't enjoy anything fully because every 5 minutes someone was saying something about Oliver that just wasn't true anymore. It seemed as if the people who wrote this crossover watched the first 5 episodes of Arrow and said, well, I've seen enough. I know how to write him now. No, they even forgot that Oliver wasn't the original vigilante. Oliver met Ted Grant and knew Wildcat came first. I hate when writers forget things. And they made Oliver, quote, make a deal again. I'm so tired of this plot. Yep. Please let Crisis on Infinite Earths be better, and that the sacrifice Oliver will probably have to do not interfere with the show we are actually seeing, because season 7 has been so, so great. Usually I love crossovers, but this one I could do without. As an Arrow fan, I was insulted. Virginios, Amanda.
See, that's interesting hearing that from her, because she's usually so over the top excited when she sends us in her voicemail. And it's awesome because she's from Brazil and she's got this wonderful accent. We love hearing from her. So I'm sorry that she didn't enjoy that as much, but she's got some good points. They were picking on Oliver from a perspective that they haven't seen what changes he's gone through so far leading up to this point in season 7. So yeah.
Picking on Oliver did irk me a bit as well, as I've been with Arrow since day one. And so I was irked, especially at Lois Lane calling him a jerk, like after knowing him for 3 seconds. That line did annoy me. Yeah. So maybe a thumbs down for Lois Lane after all.
I know.
Sorry.
Welcome awesome. To the dark side.
Well, thank you, Amanda. Let's kick it over to you guys there, Made of Steel.
All right. Well, let's start our feedback off with Miss Teen Huntress. All right. She's going to start night by night and go from night one. And I'm the only one who's fast enough to stop it. Except for your daughter, who totally seems faster than you right there. Granted, I didn't watch the show much, but what episodes I have, Nora seems faster than Barry when they really showcase both their abilities to the full levels. Oh, Barry, what have you done this time? The words every CW fan asks when something gets screwed up on shows. No way that Steven's suit would fit Grant because it would swallow him. To Diggle puking from super speed never gets old.
Agreed.
Love it.
I'm glad they had Iris telling Oliver what Felicity said and how it made her feel. But he cut that deal because he really needed to hear it. If something continues into the seasons, I hope that Oliver retaining this moment so he can appropriately apologize to Felicity later on. And of course, she didn't know that was coming in the very next episode. A nice Easter egg with the Smallville theme for the opening to the Kent Farm scene. Oh, Clark, don't sell yourself short. You've been ditching Kara since she was 13. A great scene between Barry and Oliver discussing how they tap into their abilities. Also fun, Kara and Barry teasing Oliver about his broody voice. A happy Oliver would be interesting, but maybe too asking for too much. No, Barry, don't give in to Oliver's darkness. Yay to Iris calling out Barry at the end. Boo. I was hoping Batwoman would be on Kara's Earth, but a good point. Ruby looks awesome in the suit. An okay start to the event. Moving on to night two. I love they edited the Arrow opening to feature Grant in Steven's spots. That was a very awesome touch.
Yes.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, how I wish this Deathstroke was our villain of the season instead of Diaz.
Oh my God, 100%.
Yes. Insert extreme sarcasm is what she says. Yay, Oliver, let's lie to Felicity some more because that always goes over well.
They never learn.
Nope. And Diggle just standing there when they're like, you didn't tell, and I'm like, oh, come on. Anyway, oh, Barry, Oliver will remember all these moments for later. The banter between them and the addressing of some fan comments through them is fun. Oliver flipping out about Batman outdoing him is potentially so, Oliver. Once Oliver cheated on his girlfriend with her sister.
Oh, God. Yeah, that was great.
Thank you, Barry, for pointing that as how it was.
And I love Kara's reaction too. Really?
Kara catching bullets never gets old. I won't lie, part of me wanted to see Maggie step out of one of those cop cars, even though I knew it wasn't going to happen. It won't be Floriana, most likely now, given Batwoman is on Earth 1. Still boo over that. So we won't get that fun Alex-Maggie-Kate meeting, but I still hope they have a Maggie Sawyer when Batwoman gets picked up, excuse me. At the least, they have to have a Renee Montoya.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I'm very much team Siren, keeping Oliver in jail for a night. That was cold. I mean, the man just spent 7 months in jail. And Laurel's like, yeah, a night in jail won't hurt him.
Right?
Ouch. I mean.
Although he could have gotten out. So.
Oh, yeah. All right, totally. I love how logical Kara would have handled the situation, but sadly, logic is wasted on the boys. Arrow. Please have Caitlin over more to hang out with Felicity.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yes.
What is love without respect, without trust? A great and fair line from Felicity. I have to say, in terms of out-of-the-gate suit quality, Batwoman's looks awesome. Mm. Kara, to me, still has the best-looking suit overall, but I'd put Kate under hers.
Do you think they learned from Brainy?
Who was totally out in his blue out there. I was like, wow.
Yeah, okay, but didn't it look better?
It did.
Yeah.
It was very something.
Yeah.
Okay. The Easter eggs at Arkham were well done. I feel they missed the opportunity for one more, though. Had they had on board a doctor's name on it, had been one Dr. Quinzeal, Harley Quinn.
Yeah.
That would have been the icing on the cake. Here's hoping this isn't the last time we'll see Scarecrow's gas used on the show, because really, how has that been used before?
Right?
Why can't we have Batwoman on Earth 38? I need more Kara Kate content, and for Kate to meet Alex, also world's finest, in his Kara's comic with Helena Wayne. So if you're going to use it for save it for Huntress being on Supergirl. But if you're going to have Huntress, make it the Bertinelli version, please.
There you go.
Okay.
Could have a whole Birds of Prey thing going on.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah. Yay for Oliver finally giving Felicity the apology she should have gotten last week. Are they seriously about to merge all the shows with another Flashpoint type event? Please no, as Barry messes up enough. And I don't want him messing with National City every other season also. Stop trying to make Diaz happen, Arrow. Never forget, Kara beat Clark by herself in season 2. So with help, she'll be fine now that even if he is in the black suit, true, because plot, will probably happen, but she would totally take black suit Superman out herself. A great episode and succeeded in hyping me for the Batwoman pilot. It was a small part in the crossover whole, but I think Ruby did well in this episode. Okay, night 3. Given Kara didn't change with anyone, I get her opening not even being about her, but still, this opening was really weird to me.
Mm-hmm.
It really helped me, I will say.
Supergirl.
Yeah, but at least it kind of gave the information of how we got the Black Superman. So
yeah.
Anyway, back to Team Hunters. It's probably wrong, but Deegan Superman is the most I've ever liked Superman on Supergirl. They finally got a wig right. Alex is in this episode is the best they've ever done. Hopefully this wig wardrobe choice will continue into the real seasons also. So why is Gary in this episode?
I didn't even mention Gary.
Right?
That's your doorway in, Jess.
Legends.
Jess, that's why you belong here. We had a did have a Legends crossover.
See, Legends cameo.
But Gary.
Oh, at least come it wasn't Bebo. I love Gary. Thank you.
Oh. You know what?
I blasphemy. Would take
Bebo. No. No.
That is the name that shall not be named.
Thank you. Moving along. Nothing to see here.
Even in an alternate reality, Alex is going to wear her watch upside down. I don't know if that's Kyla remembering continuity or someone else, but I loved that detail. Laugh out loud. They seriously think Jimmy can stop Oliver?
Yes.
Well, humor is a big part of this crossover, so in that vein, it makes sense.
Yeah.
Evil Cisco is fun. Aw, Takara looking sad at Alt Alex not being out.
Yeah.
Is Killer Frost low-key hitting on Alex? Because I'm okay with that. A great scene between Melissa and Kyler in the pipeline. They prove time and time again why the sisters are the heart of Supergirl. Amen. Mm-hmm. Alex kicking Barry's butt was cute. Going all Oliver's bluff on beating Killer Frost. She could have made him an icicle before he even got a punch in. Way to go, Barry. This is why people don't want to merge with you. Yeah, we lost Broody Oliver, but baby steps, man.
Baby steps.
Your sister is really lucky to have you. I'm the lucky one. Kyler and Melissa bringing all the feels. Sigh. I really enjoyed Oliver confronting Monitor, but can we stop with him making decisions without others' approval? Yeah, they'd want to live, but still enough with the secret deals from him. Also, I propose we put Batwoman on Earth 38.
There you go.
Alex should have been fighting Deegan Superman along with Clark. It was weird she wasn't, as this is Supergirl's hour, and she is the second lead for the series.
Hello.
I get they wanted to give Lois some more time, but I still missed Alex on screen. I'm all for this being an annual thing, Barry, because it means not merging with you. Yeah, that whole, as long as you have it, part doesn't sound ominous at all, Oliver. No! No, 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 please don't make Supergirl merge with Barry. He screws up good things on Arrow enough as it is. Hashtag bring back baby Sarah. I know I said I want Kara and Kate interacting more, but this cost is too much. Also, if they're going to do a merger, they better bring in Black Lightning as well, because he shouldn't get to miss out on Barry's screw-ups if others can't. I'm not excited by this teaser at all. It would be one thing if fans could pick and choose what they want to stick from Barry's shifts, but because we can't, no thank you to him messing with National City. He wants to change things again, put Batwoman on Earth 38 and then go home, because that's the only good that can come from a shift than him that involves Supergirl, as much as I can see. Minus the teaser for the next crossover / potential merger, this was a good episode. Sincerely, Team Huntress.
I just don't know how she felt. I mean, I just,
yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure what her point was.
Justice on that.
Yeah.
And anybody else think Batwoman was out of place? I don't know.
And to be fair, Barry doesn't start crisis in the comics. So, you know, that might be a moot point.
Phew.
It just happens.
All right.
Do we have audio from Justina? No.
No, but Justina, why don't you take on Blackhawk fan for us?
First, I got to say, Team Huntress, I love your passion so, so much.
Yeah, me too. 100%.
Absolutely.
Let's see what Blackhawk fan has to say. Although I did like last year's crossover better, this was okay. I was disappointed we did not get more of Supergirl cast involved. A very nice but too short scene with Brainy. Very little use of Jean and James. And worst of all, no Lena Luthor! The Supergirl episode of the crossover seemed more like an audition for a possible Superman spin-off series. The introduction of Lois Lane, Clark's proposal to Lois, the revelation that Lois is pregnant and that Clark and Lois will be staying on Argo for an extended period seems like a setup for a new series. My favorite part of the crossover was the Flash episode. So many good comic moments, particularly Oliver pumping out his chest during his first introduction to Clark Kent.
He wasn't puffing out his chest.
That was the suit.
Kara flipping the caps off the beer bottles with her thumbs. Barry originally liking the idea of switching identities with Oliver until he saw Iris flirting with Oliver. And Barry not knowing how to put on the Green Arrow suit.
Well, that was great.
Agreed. I correct them.
That's one of my nits is why do they put their suits on mannequins? Why? It just slows them down.
Oh my goodness. That was really cool. And Oliver figured out the ring and wore his into the suit. That was cool. That was cool. All right. Let's switch it back over to Arrow Squad.
All right. Well, we got another voicemail in, and this one is from Cyberman. Let's see what she had to say.
Oh, hello. This is Cyberman for Arrow Squad. I finished the crossover. I really enjoyed Barry as Oliver and Oliver as Barry. And in fact, even the opening scene where Barry is doing Arrow's opening sequence in the prison and doing the pull-ups, I absolutely laughed out loud. I haven't laughed this much in a show in quite a while. It was really funny. Even when Oliver was overrunning everything and he overran them on the roof and Barry just laughs out loud. It was really funny. And then you have to admit, when they're in jail, and, you know, Oliver's like, well, excuse me, did you talk to Laura Lance, the DA? And she's like, oh, it'll do him good to spend the night in jail. Did that not fit Black Siren's personality to a T? It really did. Again, everything made me laugh out loud. The fact that he stole the data, but it was the Flash. It was just great. I really enjoyed it a lot. It was fun. And even the third episode, which I thought was probably the weakest of the three, it had some ominous tones, and I can't wait to hear what you guys have to say about it. But there was some ominous tones about that. But anyway, happy holidays, guys. Enjoy the podcast. Listen faithfully. Don't always get this feedback in, but know I'm out here listening, and just have a great holiday season. Bye.
Aw, thanks so much, Cyberman. It is great to hear your voice again, and as always, your feedback has us laughing. That was just wonderful stuff.
Happy holidays back.
Yeah. So, Jess, I'm going to let you take Scarlet Vixen's email because her format is one of her favorites over on Arrow Squad. She does pros and cons, and it's just always fun to read through. So I'm going to let you have a taste of getting to do that.
I feel special. This one's a long one, though, so buckle in.
Is she my sidekick?
Possibly.
Scarlet Vixen?
She must be.
Maybe.
All right. She says, hello, everyone. What a ride that crossover was. I would rate it an 8.5 out of 10 overall. Most of it I found fantastic and fascinating, but a couple parts less intriguing. Trying to put all my thoughts down is a bit tougher than I had originally thought, but I will try my best. All right. Her pros. Oliver and Barry. Hands down, the best part of this whole crossover was the relationship between these two guys. I really enjoy their on-screen chemistry and the way they were bantering, yet still saying how great the other person was. Seeing them with the different suits on was so weird, but enjoyable. I am curious on if the fact that they realize they need to embrace the parts of each other will play out in the rest of the season on their own shows. I think it would be a super smart move.
I think so say we all.
Monitor. I know we didn't get to see that much of him, but I really enjoyed the portrayal. We didn't get to see all that he can do or any of his backstory, which I usually want, but in this case, I was okay with it. I did a little research online on him, so that helped. I'm pretty sure it's not the last of him.
Yeah.
Easter eggs. All these dang Easter eggs are awesome. I know I missed some because I don't know a lot of what's in the comics, but the ones I was able to notice made me feel like a kid in the candy store. Batwoman. I enjoyed their introduction of Kate Kane. Now, while I wish she was in more of the episodes, the little taste we got was intriguing enough for me to want more. Ruby Rose, who I adore, had some really great interactions with the three main characters, especially Kara. I really loved the talk they had in Kate's office looking out at Gotham.
Mm-hmm.
That was a nice scene. Mm-hmm. Diggle, in part two, where he was just kicking everyone's butt, was awesome. The puking in the trash can when Oliver sped them away was hilarious. Oh, yeah. And the 90s Flash asking him where his ring was. Amazing.
Yeah. Let's just make a quick...
It was good to see Diggle in his... in his natural element, like kicking butt. He's been a little this season.
Everybody is upset with Diggle. Like last season, nobody liked Wild Dog, and this season it's Diggle that's got that hatred going on him. We're getting nothing but complaints over on Arrow Squad about him, and we feel the same. That it's not even him. This is not the Diggle we've known for six seasons. So having him in this episode doing what he does best was such a relief to see again. Mm.
Yes. All right, so let's dig into her cons. First one is pacing. Felt like the pacing of all three parts could have been better. I really felt like we needed another hour, and it would have helped with that. Some of the storylines that were teased felt really rushed, so we weren't able to flesh out characters more, like Nora Freeze, Monitor, 90s Flash, who is in this crossover, not nearly enough, Professor Deegan, etc.
Agreed.
Yeah. So maybe a fourth show?
Yeah.
You think?
Yeah. Coming this spring, Deegan.
Oh my God.
All right. Crossing
Deegan's over. Diners.
Oh dear. Crossing over. With this being a crossover, I was expecting more characters to, you know, crossover. Minus the three main characters, Kara, Oliver, and Barry. Part one, we really only had Diggle a little bit, Clark and Lois, but they had a couple scenes. Part two had Kaelin and Cisco. Part three did have a bit more. I think the writers missed a great opportunity in the beginning of part one to show real Oliver slash Iris and real Barry slash Felicity, and having Team Flash slash Team Arrow be together trying to figure this out instead of that drugging and knocking them out thing. I just shook my head with all that Team Flash deals with. Body swap was just something they couldn't wrap their heads around.
Good point.
Yeah. Oliver and couple bashing? Not sure if that's the right way to phrase this, but I did not like the cheap shots taking at Oliver this crossover. Saying how dark he is, Iris telling Barry to not become Oliver Queen, etc. Yes, Oliver may be more brooding and darker, but that doesn't make him less of a hero or a bad person. I did enjoy the making fun of the two shows that Barry and Oliver were jabbing at each other. Don't get me wrong, I can take a joke, but some of it seemed unnecessary. I was also bothered by the way the writers were pitting Oliver slash Felicity up against Barry slash Iris. And by that, I mean the comment when Cisco was saying Iris noticed something was off, which I don't remember happening because from my memory, they had to tell her. And she didn't believe them until the real Barry told her something from the past.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Yep.
They have this lover's intuition and all this. I knew right after that scene, it was going to cause the fans of these two couples to start with the who is better, can't we just like both? Or if you don't like one, that's okay, but the writers shouldn't add fuel to that fire. I really just don't like the negativity that comes from it, and I think the writers should respect us as fans more than to stoop to that. What a concept that these two couples can be friends and root on each other's relationships. Can't wait to hear y'all discuss this great crossover.
And then, so writers, you're listening, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
See what I mean? She always has fantastic points that she sends in, and I agree wholeheartedly 100% with everything she said in that last one. Yeah.
Great feedback.
Bang on. Thanks so much, Scarlet Vixen. We'll do one more and then we'll jump back over. This one is an email from Sarah, and she says, "Hey there. Love the podcast. Overall, I thought the crossover was decent, although I think last year's was better. One thing that I think bothered me the most was Iris's treatment to Oliver." Do we sense a theme here, guys?
Yeah.
A little bit too much Oliver bashing. She goes on, Barry and Oliver have always had a close mentor and apprentice relationship, and I just don't feel that Iris really respected that. And Cisco saying, oh yeah, lover's intuition, but Iris literally didn't notice anything until after they told her they switched bodies.
Yep.
Everyone saw him being weird at the very beginning, so don't really see where Iris saw anything special. I did hear you mention on the podcast how you thought it was weird Felicity kissing Oliver as Barry. Honestly, I wish they had left that out, such a crucial plot point in the series about the relationship. She said Oliver before she kissed him, so I think that shows that she understood that this really was Oliver. I loved what he said, that the development between them, just not in this crossover. Great podcast, Sarah. Yeah, how did you guys feel? Because I did bring that up on the squad. I thought that was a little too fast for her to just accept that that really was Barry, even though to her eyes it looked like Oliver and she kissed him. I was uncomfortable by that. You guys? Well,
to be fair, they used to date. So it doesn't really matter, right? So, yeah. I mean, what's one or the other? Who cares?
I guess. Anyway. But
marriage.
Great yeah, email, Sarah. Thank you for that. Let's throw it back to you guys.
All right, Jeff, what do we have?
All right, we've got some feedback from Daryl Washington. On the Flash, loved Amazo, but how did he take powers from Oliver, who has no powers? Copying skills, plot device. I don't know. But
anyway.
I like Iris's line about how if Amazo has their strengths, he will have their weaknesses. But were any of their weaknesses used to fight Amazo?
No.
Amazo's own weakness to virus took it down. Amazo was called a killer robot, but who did it kill? Okay.
Yeah, no one.
Yeah, okay. All right, Arrow. Cisco made it seem like that Iris believed the switch story much faster than she actually did to create doubts in Felicity about her marriage.
I'm sensing
deja vu there.
Yeah. Okay. Iris was the first one to believe Barry and Oliver, but it still took time. Not as fast as Cisco would have him believe. It surprised me that on Earth 1 and 38, they have a Bruce Wayne that seems to be the same person. I was surprised to see that Nora Freeze, because I didn't think Gotham would share characters. But she was played by Stephen Amell's wife, so that's one mystery solved.
And they didn't say her name.
Right, so. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I liked Ruby Rose as Kate and Batwoman, but her serious about to become Batwoman face was a little much.
Okay, seen Batman much?
How did Barry and Oliver get over the fear toxin so fast? Yeah, I could understand the Flash working it out fast.
It's Arrow's fortitude.
Yeah, they weren't given an antidote yet. They're fine after Batwoman takes them down. They're pulling from Batman Begins, but the movie had an antidote. True. Mm-hmm. It upset me deeply that Kara would just x-ray Batwoman's mask, which I brought up earlier.
Yeah.
Kara wants to keep her own identity secret, but can't respect the choice of another hero who chooses to wear a mask. Batwoman being an unknown or not, it's up to her, not Kara, who she reveals her identity to. For heroes concerned about their identities, Superman and Supergirl refer to each other's names a little too much while in costume.
Yeah,
you think? Why didn't the red clouds and yellow lightning follow Barry and Oliver to Gotham?
It did. Just Gotham is dark.
Yeah.
So dark.
I couldn't see it. Yeah.
I am the night.
Did John
step into the darkness, Batman?
Did John Wesley Shipp's Flash scene remind anyone of the scene in Batman v Superman? Superman. Okay, we'll see. In the jail scene, Kara says that she would have super sped them out of there. So why didn't she?
Because she's lawful good.
Mm-hmm. When Barry is telling Oliver to speed to Arkham to get the info they need, and Oliver says he doesn't want to take the chance, why doesn't Kara do it? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Supergirl.
Martian Manhunter is one of the most powerful beings in the universe, yet he's essentially put on crowd control.
Yeah.
That's one of my huge complaints about Martian Manhunter in general and the fact that they don't have him in the Justice League comics either. But anyway, I totally agree with you.
Yeah, hello, founding member.
Yeah. Brainy takes on Amazo in flight and we don't get to see.
Right. Yeah.
I would have preferred to see Supergirl with the book since it's her show and let Superman run. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're always doing the whole who's faster thing anyway, Flash or Superman. Yep.
Yeah. That's a big thing.
Mm-hmm. Did we really have to go to an alternate reality to be reminded of Jeremiah and be reminded of Alex's desire for children for the first time this season?
Mm.
Mm. Yeah. I love the pregnant Lois reveal and the proposal, but didn't understand the move to Argo City. So, Karen, you want to jump in there?
Well, he does live in Argo City for a while in the comics, but, you know, could just be getting him off the planet, maybe?
Well, here's my deal. Argo City, Superman doesn't have powers.
That's true.
So you know, the baby, when the baby kicks, as Kara mentions,
it won't kill her.
Yeah, exactly. So, okay.
Well, and I'm sure they had to use kryptonite to conceive, and I'm not being funny. I think they did have to use a small dose of kryptonite in order to conceive. So him knowing that ahead of time, you know, hey, going there will probably just nip any problems in the bud.
Yeah. All right, back to Daryl. If the show wants to ignore Superman, he doesn't need to go to Argo City for that. Does this mean we're going to get Kara in Metropolis too?
Well, okay, that's not exactly the same trade-off.
Mm-hmm.
And also, if Earth 38 is the real Earth 38, there's other superheroes that can handle Metropolis.
Yeah. Although in this episode, Clark makes it sound like, you know, in the feedback that it's unprotected because he's not there.
But come on.
Yeah, anyway. part of me is glad that Lena was left out because I don't need yet another is she possibly evil cliffhanger. I'm so tired of it. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
I wish that Kara, realizing that she didn't need the DEO to be a hero and to support Alex, was something that she came to on her own.
Yeah.
Good thoughts, Daryl.
All right, you guys want to listen to Mona Fescue's feedback now? let me get a drink real quick here.
Everybody buckle in.
Yep, we're going on a ride. Okay, Mona Fescue says, hello, podcasters of Arrow Squad, Central City Underground, and Made of Steel, and Gotham Undercover. That's me. Mutton chopping Mona Fescue here. Prologue. Let's slice this sheep dip up three ways, shall we? It will be by the episode and comes in three parts. I have my reasons for this approach, as soon will become apparent. Part one, Flash, writing style, production values, and direction. The comic combat plot synergy is against the Amazo, a robot threat, which requires a minimum investment in audience emotion, provides a killable villain, and as depicted is almost a prop-o actor, which is a remarkable achievement in TV CGI for Kevorkian and crew. The body swap MacGuffin is the writer invented gadget play, and the script jokes are rather ingenious to keep the directorial pacing quick, and the episode Flash light in tone. It seems fluffy and very easy to digest as a cathartic experience, and that might be the only gripe I have about it. Lighting, stunts, camera work, set dress, sound were above average. One can see the production values were watched over and checked. Acting. I have my favorites. Tom Cavanaugh in his latest iteration as Sherlock Wells maximizes presence and effect with the snippets he receives in the script. Carlos Valdea and Daniel Pennebaker shine as always. It's Valdez, right? But yeah. Mm-hmm.
Stephen Amell and Grant Gustin do good reverse reads on each other. Candace Patton, one I find either loves or hates her portrayal of Iris West. I happen to love her Iris West. The weakest actors in the cast of First Principles were, as I expected, Tyler Hoechlin, who as Superman is a clown, and Melissa Benoist, who Supergirl, as she acted the part, stuck out as a forced character, very much a bent nail, whose part was overwritten to make her seem in, but which unfortunately, because of the nature of the writing, made her come off unnatural. Rate for acting, directing, writing, 4, 3, 3 out of 5, 5, 5. End of part one. Part two, Arrow. And he wrote it all in caps. Writing style, production values, and direction. Mark Guggenheim is an experienced professional writer for both television shows and in the comic book superhero genre, so he should know what he does. Nevertheless, from a writing mechanics perspective, the episode is glitchy and drags pace with too much yakking and not enough doing. One major problem in the writing is the Olicity crap that interferes with moving the action forward. That's his emphasis, not mine. It's all caps again. Another problem is that while Guggenheim tries to keep the same switched bodies gag going as the comic-based motif, it starts to wear on my last damn nerve about 22 minutes at last episode time in. It should have been backgrounded or sublimated to the hunt for John Deegan earlier. And once again, Melissa Benoist and now Ruby Rose have their parts forced in the writing so that their roles do not feel seamless in the ensemble mechanics of character action and voice as written. This is not Guggenheim at his best. Lighting, stunts, camera work, set dress, sound were just average. The stunts were a bit less well choreographed, and I wish the shots chosen had been selected by this inept director with more care. I swear I have seen those same damn bridges in both Supergirl and Arrow at least 4 times. Acting. I have problems and heartburn with Emily Bett Rickards, whose part is overwritten to the point that I do not believe she can do or be what is claimed of her by the characters, actors around her. She skunks every scene she is in. Melissa Benoist has yet to step up and impress this crossover. She suffers the same skunk vibe as Rickards. Tell it like it is there.
I can't say I'm disagreeing with him.
I continue to like the Flash cast. Amell provides workmanlike acting and David Ramsey as John Diggle impresses. Most of the other Arrow cast members ensemble are dead fish on camera this episode. I really especially hate Echo Kellum, who portrays Curtis Holt. The man is so unlikable through the camera that I cringe every time he mugs in a scene and mangles his lines. At least the cameo throwbacks by John Barrowman as Malcolm Merlyn and Tom Cavanaugh as Eobard Thawne were nice reminders that there used to be good actors on these shows as the villains. Ouch. Jeremy Davies as John Deegan sucks like a bad case of Jeff Lemire writing The Terrifics or that other piece of crap, The Sentry. Ouch, dude. Hey. Tyler Hoechlin remains the clown Superman. Get him out of there. Rating for acting, directing, and writing, 2, 2, 2 out of 5, 5, 5. Okay, part three. Like falling down a well, is it not? Hold on to your keisters for the splash landing. Too bad there is no water at the bottom of the plunge. Writing style, production values, and direction. It has Derek Simon's name smeared across it. For those who have experienced my Supergirl episode criticisms before,
yes,
my opinion of Derek Simon's illiterate, incompetent, incoherent work is well known. He cannot plot, he cannot create three-dimensional character moments, and he cannot write above propaganda-level polemic when he is the main author. In this case, specifically for this episode, he pollutes the Mark Guggenheim story treatment with his own peculiar ruffles and flourishes of absolute manure. Jesse Warren is given the thankless task of trying to make the garbage script work. Fight sequences are, as usual with this director, staged frame, podially left frame to right,
with CGI insets sped up by frame count per second in a vain attempt to mask the jumps and the edits. Lighting, sound, and set dresses are of the usual Supergirl substandard one expects of this series. Or once, because this director, pacing and camera shots are completely staged. But what is the point when the words spoken and the action staged are so incompetently scripted that all sense of story's sequential logic goes a-glimmering? This is supposed to be a Supergirl-based episode, but did one get the feeling that Melissa Benoist was written as a cameo in her own show again? Acting. What acting? Aside from the ever-trooper Stephen Amell and a rather unusual twisted Carlos Valdez, who does make a believable kingpin-type gangster, really? The cast just walked through their lines this episode. It was painful to see the shreds of the performances. I know this cast can deliver. Once again, Tyler Hoechlin, Bozo's the Superman. I'm sensing a theme there with Tyler. The attempt to make Brain Dead actually a badass who could take on Amazo comes out of left field. Brain Dead. I can't see it there. As a writer fail, and also shows why the inept Jesse Rath should be walked off the show. Future portents. Speaking of which, Crisis on Infinite Earths, the 2019 crossover plan, features a write-out which should make the Supergirl show fans very nervous. Anyway, time to rate this mutton shank for acting, writing, and directing. 0.03 out of 5.55. There you go. There's Montefescu.
You know, I can't say I disagree with a lot of his criticisms and harshness in a way. I tried to be a little polite about it, but I was feeling very similar about a lot of the Supergirl parts of it. And that's, I'm actually very behind on the show because I'm having trouble keeping up with it because of a lot of things that he was saying. So
yeah,
it's tough, and it's sad that it affects the crossover as a whole. It affects his enjoyment of the whole thing. So that's unfortunate, but
I agree.
Is some of us out there that are with you on some of those.
But his feedback, as always, is amazing. I mean, the analysis he gives is, it always stuns me, that he is just so detailed, and I just love it. So Montefescu, thank you so much for your feedback.
Yeah,
that was a spectacular analysis. I must say, I agree with him on Melissa's acting. I don't like her, and that's why I don't watch Supergirl.
See, and we're free to share how we feel here.
Part of me wants to know what he thinks about The Flash, but part of me doesn't.
Agree.
I don't know that you would like his feedback on every episode. I actually enjoy his feedback on Supergirl, but I think he would be much more even-handed on Flash, to be honest. And it wouldn't be as interesting because I love that he's just so critical of things. And it really, it kind of shines that spotlight onto stuff that you're like, you know what? That's kind of right.
But it amazes me, if he's that critical, why does he continue watching?
Because he knows, okay, you tend to criticize stuff that you like more than anything else. I mean, you're just, you forsake anything you don't like. So I think what his deal is that, you know, when this show shines, it's good, and the acting can be good, and the writing can be good. And so that's what standard he holds it up to is, look, I know you can be good, so why aren't you? Why aren't you living up to that potential?
And when he likes an episode, he is just as dedicated to every single detail of why it is excellent.
Yeah.
And it's not just okay, I really like that. I mean, it is just that detailed in every single piece. I really appreciate all that he puts into this, and I agree with Karen. I think it's out of what he hopes the series can be. Mm-hmm.
Well, then I challenge him to send feedback to Flash and Arrow. I would love to hear his thoughts on it, because I agree with his perspective on Curtis. I would love to hear what he thinks of the rest of the show. So there you go.
I agree with his perspective on Curtis, too. I agreed with him a lot of what
he said. He's really so smart. I admire him a lot. I've never met him, but I swear we would be friends in real life.
All right. right. I think we've got a little bit more from Arrow Squad.
Yeah, we got one more from Dad L, which I think is one of the coolest superhero names. We have a lot of our podcasters or feedbackers with superhero names, and he calls himself Dad L, the last father of Krypton. It's awesome.
I think isn't he a Gotham feedbacker too?
He may have. He does talk to us quite a bit. Yeah, maybe he calls into a few of them.
Yeah, he used to be a Supergirl one as well,
which would suit his name.
Yeah, I think he hits all the shows.
Yeah,
good. Hi, Daniel.
All right, but he starts off, and I do not
Somebody
want to break your eardrums.
Save me.
Oh, well, that works too because I was going to do this.
Somebody save me.
And then he goes, hearing the song and seeing the shot of Smallville made this entire crossover worth it to me. What a thrill. I jumped out of my seat. If next year's Crisis crossover doesn't have at least one Smallville character, I will be heartbroken. I so expected one when they did that.
I did too.
First, I want to follow up on some of Martin's comics from Arrow Squad. He echoes my thoughts exactly on the current Flash suit. The weird bits... Oh, thank you. That's awesome. The weird bits of different fabric bug me. He's got a diamond in the middle of his torso, and there are other odd patches on the neck. He needs the chin strap back to balance the helmet out. Even Stephen Amell couldn't help that suit.
I'm sorry, he looks goofier.
He looked goofier in an already goofy suit, yes.
Yeah,
yeah.
On to a few more nitpicks. It was awesome to see John Wesley's ship, but I wanted more. I was disappointed he had such little screen time. Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. I was underwhelmed by Batwoman. Let's have a Superman show with Lois and Baby Kent instead.
Hey, now.
Well, yeah, I love Kate Kane, but I was underwhelmed with how they presented Batwoman. I just thought they didn't do enough with her. And again, it was not enough. We needed more from my perspective, anyway.
Well, hello.
Anyway, he continues.
Wait till next year. That's all I can
true. Say. Final nitpick. Yes. I didn't like how Flash and Supergirl slowed time by traveling around the world. I understand the Superman movie reference, but this was really hand-wavy. Especially then going in opposite directions seemed weird to me. Yeah, I'd say that was a real...
Balance out?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that should have negated what they were doing.
Yeah. So, big hand wave there. On to the good.
How did they know, going so fast, how did they know that they were on the same plane? Wouldn't it be more like an X or a cross? But instead it was like Saturn's rings all in one line.
Explain nothing!
Well,
that is not even close to real physics, so I'm just going to have to...
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Harley's our resident physics professor. So, but even that, when they kept going, jumping to a clip of either Barry running or Kara flying... They weren't even going fast enough through the respective cities and parts they're showing to represent how fast they should have been going.
You could see the stuff passing them.
Yeah.
It was dumb.
All right. But he continues on to the good. I enjoy the comedy and the interactions very much. Stephen Amell can do comedy. I loved all the Easter eggs. It was so much fun to look for them. Diggle had an awesome action scene at Arkham, and there was a Green Lantern reference. I loved all the Superman we got. I liked the new Lois Lane. Overall, this crossover was fun and entertaining. Why is Crisis on Infinite Earths coming next year? I believe next year will be the final season for some shows, or Arrow could be over this year with Crisis being Stephen Amell's swan song as Green Arrow. Just speculation on my part. My
Not
rating
just your
is...
part, Dad.
What's that?
Not just your part, Dad L.
Yeah. My rating is 7.5.
Somebody save me.
Zuh, pluralized. Dad L, last father of Krypton.
Nice.
Fantastic feedback, as always, Dad L. Thanks for jumping in to be part of this crossover with us.
Alrighty, Miss Green Butterfly, you have some feedback from our man Ken in Chicago.
I do. He sent some tweets over, and he said, I like crossovers. It's a big bonus of the shared universe, but this year's Elseworlds seemed more like a setup for next year's Crisis on Infinite Earths. Also, yep. I thought there would be more Batwoman. She stood on a building and landed on a car. Although both great visual scenes. And then he sent a follow-up where he rated all the crossovers that we've had so far over the years. So the first one, Brave and the Bold, he gave it a minus. Invasion got an A. Crisis on Earth X got an A+. And Elseworlds gets a B. He reiterated that it feels more like a setup for Crisis next year. The highlight was the 90s Flash, and the low light was Too Little Batwoman and Ollie lying to Felicity again.
His middle name is Liar Lying.
He'll never lie. Fire.
Yeah.
Anybody notice all the glyphs as on Star Labs as the reality was getting rewritten?
Yes.
One of them was Crisis on Earth X.
Mm-hmm.
So, mm-hmm. Or whatever it was. So, yeah.
Yep.
Cool. Very cool. All right. Does that do it as far as feedback?
I have a short message from CJ Thunder.
Oh,
yeah.
Go for it.
He says, I loved Elseworlds. Oliver in the Flash uniform pulling out a wedgie. Ha, ha, ha. It's also great to see Oliver and Barry learn from each other. Mm-hmm. The actor who played the Monitor was perfect. I wonder what the anti-Monitor will look like during the Crisis on Infinite Earths. Also, Barry Allen from the original series calling out John for not wearing his ring. That was some huge Green Lantern fan service.
Mm-hmm.
He gives this crossover on a 5 scale, 4.5.
Very nice.
Nice.
The actor's name, by the way, is LaMonica Garrett.
Mm-hmm.
He's an athlete. He used to play slam ball, if you remember that. And Monitor's name is actually Mar Novu. So
cool.
If you were wondering, not that anyone is wondering. but big shout out to LaMonica there. He did a good job.
Yeah.
Excellent. All right. That's all I think we have. Does anybody have anything they need to say or forever keep your peace on this crossover?
Well, how about we do a roundtable final words?
All right. Lead us off there, Martin.
Okay. I think I'm with a lot of our feedbackers that this crossover, it started off really strong and felt like it was going to be the best one we had yet. And it was losing its pace, losing itself as it went on, and ultimately landed as not being the best crossover, which is unfortunate, but there was so much about it to love, so much about it to enjoy, with some very valid points to nitpick about. So I hope that it leads into some fantastic things when all of our shows come back. I would love to see some of this stuff get brought into our storylines and into our characters as their personalities change and they grow from this. I would love to see that. And then, of course, I mean, it was almost a slap in the face when they slapped the title screen on at the end, Infinite Crisis Earth, or Crisis on Infinite Earth coming in 2019. And we're all sitting there going, I thought that was supposed to be this one. What the F? So it felt like they slapped all the fans across the face. So that, I think, was the worst way they could have ended it. But it also leads to a lot of excitement because none of us know exactly how they're going to handle it and what they're going to do with it. So it's keeping me around for sure. I'm excited no matter what.
Absolutely. Mr. X-Force 11, Jeff, what do you say?
I just kind of a hope for next year. What I would really like to see is, you know, a one big writer's room. Maybe they can sit down this summer and write out all of the episodes at once and, you know, maybe have some consistency in directing across the three too. So that there's just a little more consistency across the crossover, so that there's, you know, a solid piece, especially if you're going to do Crisis. You've got this huge tome of comic book to look at and how to apply that. So I think you need to have consistent writing across all three. But I'm, you know, looking forward to seeing what they're going to do, and I'm definitely like the idea of combining Earth so that we're, you know, in one Earth and not having to cross over as much.
Yeah.
Professor?
I still stand by my ratings. I appreciate the feedback that everybody sent in. I'm not blind to the criticism. But I think, you know, and I will rewatch it again in its 3-episode entirety and probably find new things I didn't see and find new things to appreciate. So I do look forward to that. And I look forward to fall 2019. I too also want to see some of this bleed into January and the rest of the seasons of all of these shows for sure. And I look forward to what they do with the next one. And it's almost like the crossover is its own show. And we just get 3 episodes and then we have to wait and see what the next installment is. So here's to 2019.
Amen. Yeah. All right, Jess, what do you say?
I liked this from like a fun aspect. So of all the crossovers, I laughed throughout the entire 3 parts for this one. The writing was great. The comedy was great. But there were definitely some certain plot elements, I think, that were lacking that kind of ended up bringing it down. The way that it kind of ended, I don't know, the third one, it felt a little flat for everybody, that third part. I don't really know why. I don't think, as let down as Martin is by the tease for Crisis, because that just makes me so excited. I'm just excited for all the possibilities and what they could kind of do with that. And then ultimately what it's going to mean for some of our shows, because there's some really big things that they could do that would, you know, change the course of several of our shows. So overall, I think this was the most fun I've had with any of the crossovers, but in terms of like a cohesive storyline, or I would say it wasn't the best, but overall a good time.
I agree with you, Jess. This was the funniest so far. Yeah. I laughed way more than I've laughed on any of the shows ever, for sure. I agree with you there.
Yeah.
I would just echo on to that, Jess, as far as my final comments. I think this just pointed out, and I'm calling out my own show here. This just pointed out to me the weaknesses that Supergirl has in this Arrowverse, in trying to combine. I agree with Lana Fescue, trying to seam her way in, S-E-A-M, her way into this storyline and these scenes. There were a couple of moments that really worked, but overall, it really fell flat. And I think that's a larger reflection on what's going on with the show itself. And so I just really, really want to see some wholesale changes made to Supergirl. And I would like to think and hope that with Superman leaving and exiting for a little while, that we really can focus on Supergirl as a hero and as a person with Kara Danvers and what that means, and see where that takes her in her own show, so that her being brought into crossovers like this can make her the strength that her side of this needs to be. Karen, what do you say?
Yep, all that. Sorry. I have to say we were light on a few characters that I would have liked to see more of. The Flash, you know, the Earth 90 Flash, definitely 100%. More Dibny, because I love Ralph Dibny. We didn't get
Baby Giraffe.
Lena. Yeah, Baby Giraffe. We didn't get Lena in this, and that would have been nice as well. And Jean, always, he's a utility player, utilize him. Did we have to get the whole, you know, hey, we're in a speakeasy thing and leave Jean out? I am super excited as a comic book fan to have seen this with all the humor, all the Easter eggs, all of the references. I'm glad it wasn't Crisis, because this just means that Crisis is going to be great. Knock on wood. but, you know, there has to be a flat Flash suit on the ground, puddled. I don't care whether he dies or not. It's just that needs to happen. And Superman has to carry Supergirl next year. That's all I ask, writers. Those two things. And they can be out of context, you know, they can be different. But please, for the Crisis, let's do that. And I agree that it seems like its own show.
Like, it should be Arrowverse Crossovers as its own show. It really does feel like that little capsule. And hello, why was Constantine out there? That's all I can say. We got Gary, no Constantine. Come on. All right.
All right, Miss Green Butterfly, let's bring us home.
Well, first I have to say I agree with all of you that are looking forward to ripple effects from this crossover in our other shows. I hope we see something, because I think there should be something. I really appreciated the criticism and points that were brought up tonight, but I still really loved how the story acted as three pieces that fit together well, but it seemed also like each piece really had the tone and the feeling of the show, of the title card that it shared that night. Mm-hmm. So I legitimately felt like I was watching a Flash episode, a Arrow episode, and a Supergirl episode, but yet the story was connected beautifully, and I would seriously buy all these crossovers as like Blu-ray movies. You know, somebody released those because I would definitely buy them. And I was still amazed by the soundtrack, listening to all the different superhero cues as they crossed over and mishmashed together over and over. And I just had so much fun with it. And the best part is I got to talk to all of you live about it.
Oh,
yeah.
Samesies.
Absolutely.
Totally.
Absolutely. All right. I just want to say how fabulous of a time this has been. And you all have contributed so much to it as our listeners, just like you do week in, week out through all of our episodes. If you want to get your feedback into Central City Underground, to Made of Steel, or to Arrow Squad, Gotham Undercover, any of our high quality Golden Spiral Media Podcast Network shows, you can call us at 304-837-2278. Or you can go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback, where you can type out a message, you can attach an audio file, or use our provided SpeakPipe widget. You can follow all of these shows on Twitter at The Flash GSM, Arrow Squad GSM, Supergirl GSM, and Gotham GSM. You can also find each of our Facebook groups at The Flash GSM, Arrow Squad, Supergirl GSM, and Gotham GSM. Karen, where can folks find you out on the interwebs?
I am on the Twitter machine as at Aleveria, Aleveria. And there's a link in my bio that will take you to my blog, which will show you all of my other links.
Excellent. Professor.
I am on Twitter at CJ Nessie, N-E-S-I.
Excellent. Martin.
Twitter, I am at CyberTiger17. That's like Siberian Tiger. I'm also going to throw in a little call out for my other show that Jess is part of me with. I'm sure she'll also add something in. But Tomorrow's Legends is the Legends of Tomorrow podcast. We are not part of GSM, but we are part of all of this group, and we are all interconnected as friends and co-hosts. So if you guys would like to catch up with us on that, we have just gone on a super long hiatus. We don't come back till April. We'd love to have a lot of you listeners join us over there if you also like that show.
Absolutely. Green Butterfly, Justina, where can folks find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Justy78, where I am constantly talking about superheroes.
That is true.
Jess, how about you?
You can find me at Jess in Atlanta, and you can also find me at Tomorrow's Legends with one R. I'm the one that is generally tweeting, although Martin throws a few in there as well.
Yeah.
X-Force, Jeff, where can folks find you?
At X-Force11 on Twitter.
There you go. And I am at The Silver Vox on Twitter, or Facebook as under John P. McGrail. Folks, this has been such a good ride. I also do want to give just a quick plug in for the Golden Spiral Media Podcast Network on the Rewatch podcast. My man Corey and his co-hosts over there have done, they're doing an ongoing rewatch of the Quantum Leap series. So if you want to get into that, you heard all the references during this crossover.
And there's our final reference.
Yep.
That's right.
Cisco approves.
Also, they did the entire 1990 John Wesley Shipp Flash series. So if you want to dive in deep on those you can find those out on our, again, goldenspiralmedia.com podcast feeds. All right, unless anybody else has anything to say. Thank you guys so much. This has been just a blast to do with all of you. Mm-hmm. Meeting some of you for the first time right here, this has been such a cool thing. So thanks for letting me take the wheel.
Yeah, this has been a lot of fun.
Thanks for driving.
And yeah, John, you did such a great job.
Thanks for letting me crash the GSM party.
Always.
Anytime. Anytime.
You're welcome, always.
It's all always right. Fun to see you guys, because some of us got video going on here. It's fun to see you guys. I know your voices so well, and now to get to see the face come with the voice is very entertaining.
I'm sorry.
Most of you. But still, it's fun to hear you guys live, like Justina was saying, hear you guys live and be part of it all together. It's a pretty cool idea, and I think we should down the road look at doing it again sometime. We could do like mid-season get-togethers or something, or post-season wrap-ups or something, you know, something like that.
We're the crossover of GSM.
There you go.
The GSM-verse.
Plus me.
Plus Jeff.
You're a part of it. Don't worry. We don't need to tack you on. You're in. And, you know, Justina as well, so.
Yeah.
Next year, we'll just start a new show, Crisis on Infinite Podcasts.
There you go.
I love it. Well, shall we do a roundtable sign-off, guys?
Absolutely.
All right, I'll kick it off. Thanks for being with us, everybody. This is The Flash, signing off.
And this is Harley Quinn. I'm out.
X-Force 11, talk to you later.
The Professor, back to his office.
And the Silver Box, finding a children's story to read.
Oh, the Scarlet Cougar's going to go watch some hot guys on the TV.
Happy holidays, everyone. Green Butterfly, out.
See you all next year.